Jeff and Ray stood looking in shock at the sight that greeted them. It wasn't that they were in any mortal danger, and it wasn't that they'd been surprised as such. It was the fact that they found themselves talking to one of the planet's indigenous species, a hopper. Now, two things went through Jeff's mind at boggling speed. Firstly, that this very alien was something he'd seen before, his childhood space hopper. Secondly, he felt guilt at realizing he'd eaten the animal's ancestors recently, the orange steaks served up as his most recent meal. Yes, here he was, light years across the galactic disk, and he was confronted by a living, breathing, bouncy toy. He rubbed his eyes. The hopper noticed.
"Is friend all right?"
it asked Ray. Ray was thankfully more composed.
"I think so. It's probably a little cosmic culture shock. Did you know that on his planet they have toys that look just like yourselves?"
"I hear of it. Well, not planet, but toy."
The hopper looked sullen as it bounced a little closer.
"Many years of hunting for meat, skin taken for full of slugs and yobs. Skin sent to many places because of this."
It pointed at Jeff with its antennae.
"Friend had one as child?"
Jeff spoke out.
Well, I had one, but it wasn't made out of your skin. It was rubber, all over. Didn't have any of that fur on it or real eyes or anything."
"Oh, cheap one. That okay. So he not bad human?"
Ray shook his head.
No, not at all. He, good human."
The hopper cheered up considerably at this and changed the subject.
"You here to find Universal Remote? I hear you talking."
"Well, yeah, that's right, but it's impossible. Either it's down in a village over there," replied Ray, pointing to the distant huts, "or it doesn't even exist. Either way, we're both dead." Jeff nodded in agreement. "Yeah, impossible."
"Impossible?"
snorted the hopper.
"Pah! Not impossible, not non-existent. We know where it is."
It was pleased that it had impressed the humans and skipped back a few feet.
"You come out now, they got humans."
From behind the rocky outcrops and large boulders, 20 more hoppers bounced tentatively out. Some were older, looking more leathery and beginning to grey around the whiskers, and some were a little more than football-sized babies, bobbing energetically at the excitement of meeting two other beings that didn't want to skin and eat them. Jeff looked around at the orange crowd of bouncing admirers. It was like one of his more surreal dreams. But at least they had information, allies, and some sense of purpose now.
"Town meeting tonight,"
called the hopper. It beckoned to Jeff and Ray with its curly antennae.
"You come with us. Hop on."
Ray and then Jeff approached a hopper each, rather sheepishly, and straddled the orange blobs. Jeff mumbled a rather feeble apology as he got on and gripped the antennae. Then the entire herd of hoppers, led by the two humans, moved off. Jeff wobbled as he bounced, remembering his childhood days of boinging around in the garden, and it soon came back to him. Minutes later, the plane echoed to the sound of ecstatic whoops and laughter as he felt the wind in his hair and bounced higher and further than he'd ever done as a child. A huge circular table in a huge circular room displayed a huge circular map to Lord Kelvin of Scrag. He had brought his royal advisers in to locate the whereabouts of the Universal Remote. And in just 2 days of researching, it had to be said, they'd done well for their new ruler. The great book repositories and libraries of the entire planet were scrutinised and examined meticulously for any clues leading to the fabled item. And they had narrowed it down to one of two locations, both of which were on the surface of Profania Alpha.
Kelvin stood up from his chair and proceeded to walk around the table, as he'd seen his father do, stroking his beardless and rather pointy chin. Underneath the thin veneer of bravado, though, was a lost cause. He had no idea how to read a map whatsoever. But that, he theorised, was what the royal advisers were for.
"Oh, tell me," he began, "what's the name of this planet again?"
The bravest and highest ranked of the advisers cleared his throat.
"My lord, this is Profania Alpha, 70 light-years from the Scrag Empire, situated 2/3 of the way across the galactic disk, en route to the Bellatrix system."
The advisor decided to stop there, as he could see Kelvin's eyes glazing over.
"Ah, good, good. Do we own this planet?"
The advisor shook his head.
"No, my lord. It is self-governed by the dominant species, headed by Queen Shelley of the Slargs."
"Oh. Is that going to be a problem, do you think?"
said Kelvin, chewing on a fingernail.
Not really, my lord. Although the Slargs have a formidable military presence, it is fortunate for us that the Universal Remote is not located there with the Slargs. We have searched the archives for all the available facts, and have reason to believe it lies with a secondary species known as the Yobs. That might pose a slight, problemette.
Kelvin was experiencing three simultaneous emotions by now. Boredom, confusion, and worry. He felt that the time had come for actions, because words had clearly become too tiresome for him.
"Mobilise the troops. Prepare the planet destroyers," he declared.
Another advisor cleared his throat.
"We don't actually have planet destroyers, my lord."
"Really? What about galactic blitzers?"
"No."
"Oh, well, what's the name of that really big ship, then? The red one? It's got that nice tower on top, and the big guns at the front?"
"That's the Scraggy Imperial Battlecruiser, my lord. Your father's ship."
"Oh. Well, that one, then. Load it up and let's get going."
Kelvin clasped his hands together in satisfaction and grinned maniacally. The advisers rose from the table and began to make for the exit.
"Wait!"
called their overlord and master.
"There's something I haven't done yet."
The advisers looked around at each other. They'd surely dotted all the I's and crossed every T. The researching and planning was perfect. Kelvin pointed at the shortest of the advisers with a thin index finger.
"You!"
he called.
"You displease me."
The short advisor jumped and began stuttering in fear.
What have I done to upset you, your worshipfulness? I've served you faithfully for years, days.
Kelvin realised that the short man had a point. His eyes roved around the room. Finally, they stopped on a half-drank cup of tea that the advisor had left to go cold. Vindictively, Kelvin pointed to the cup.
"You offend me with your blatant refusal to finish the royal tea."
As the unfortunate advisor continued to shake and protest, Kelvin made his way over to the throne. He jabbed the button on the arm of the chair, and the all-too-familiar flash and bang reduced the advisor to a small pile of dust.
"Let that be a lesson to you,"
yelled Kelvin to his assembled nervous audience.
"Now, let's go to war."
Morning came on Profania Alpha. The sun was just creeping over the horizon, and the village of the Yobs was slowly coming to life. One particularly foul brute lay crashed out at the foot of their tall tree, surrounded by the sticky orange remains of a hopper kebab. The Yob looked like the result of a gene-splicing experiment involving a gorilla, a wrestler, and a rhinoceros. His large body was topped by a thick neck, and on top of that was a small head, with a sloping forehead that indicated the absence of a particularly large brain. Fleas and flies played upon the unconscious lump, no doubt basking in the stomach-emptying stench that pervaded his very skin. A distant rumbling woke the Yob from his snooze. Dragging himself into a sitting position, he looked down at his stomach.
"Must be hungry.
He grunted and scratched his personal areas, sniffing his stubby fingers after each scratch. But the rumbling persisted. Not only did it persist, but it grew louder. The Yob looked around to see other Yobs emerging from their huts in equal puzzlement. One of the Yobs grunted and ran to the edge of their settlement, pointing wildly at the horizon in the direction of the sound. His eyes widened, and the ugly face froze as the information took time to crawl from his eyes to his minuscule and rarely used brain. Out of the sun came an incredible sight. 1,000 hoppers poured forth, an unstoppable orange mass, accompanied by a thundering drumbeat generated by their bouncing movements. Right at the front of the charge were Ray and Jeff, wearing crude vests that had wooden plates attached for armour. They hung on to the antennas of the biggest hoppers and swung large wooden clubs over their heads. Jeff swore he could hear the classical strains of Ride of the Valkyrie in his head, whilst Ray hummed, Holding Out for a Hero, as the soundtrack to the epic scene. The Yobs may have been stupid to the point of insanity, but they knew an attack when they saw one. Grunting and yelling frantically, they raced around, grabbing clubs and stones for use as weapons. Some had crude swords made from scrap metal. The Yobs formed a rough line, facing the oncoming stampede. Jeff shouted over at Ray.
Okay, this is it. You take your lot round to the right and I'll sort this lot out.
The bouncing horde split into two groups, confusing the Yobs even more. Behind Jeff, the whooping group of hoppers swung double clubs around their heads from their antennae. The first wave of hoppers ploughed into the Yob line like a tidal wave into a sandcastle. It was inconceivable to the Yobs that the timid orange bouncy things could ever pose any sort of threat to them. But generations of mindless slaughter can do great things to motivate the meek. The Yobs scattered as the hoppers attacked, swinging their clubs into the heads of their lifelong enemies. Blood, sweat and drool sprayed into the air with every impact. Every now and again, one of the Yobs would manage to hit a hopper and it would scream out loudly as it deflated and died, leaking its marmalade-like blood. But this only served to enrage the fallen one's comrades, and the attack grew in ferocity. Ray took his group around the side of the village, dispatching any retreating Yobs that ran from the onslaught. He fought away to the tree at the centre of the settlement and began to circle it, keeping any Yobs at bay with a dizzying barrage of swinging clubbage. Meanwhile, at the front of the village, the Yobs were putting up a good fight. They'd broken up into smaller groups and each group successfully coordinated their defences, picking off a few hoppers every few minutes. Jeff stopped his ride and leapt off, adrenaline surging through his veins, as he ran screaming into the Yob defences. One of the Yobs spun his huge frame around to see the unnatural sight of Jeff, a human on the side of the hoppers. He swung his log-like arms around, catching Jeff on his shoulder and knocking him off his feet. Jeff went tumbling across the dusty ground. He looked up to see the dust clear, and the sun was eclipsed by the huge Yob standing over him. It was all over. Kelvin's giant battle cruiser, the Furious Anger, came out of hyperspace into the Profania system. Looking like a barnacled red shark, it powered along, using multiple nuclear fusion drive engines towards its goal. Overlord Kelvin stood at the top of his ship's observation tower, surveying the journey. In his right hand, he held his father's scepter of office, a thin, bejeweled stick that concealed a deadly, electrified spike. In his left, he held a paper sick bag, already half full. Lightspeed travel didn't agree with the poor boy. A uniformed navigator stepped up.
My lord, we've arrived at the Profania system. The planet we seek is ahead, just there.
Excellent, said Kelvin. The soldier saluted and turned to leave. One more thing?
Yes, my lord.
Kelvin handed him the puke sack.
Take this away, will you? There's a good chap.
Jeff lay on the dusty ground, breathlessly looking up at the huge yob standing over him. The yob grunted in disgust and raised his club. It was all over. All over for the yob, as a small orange hopper flew through the air and hit the man mountain smack in the temple. The yob toppled to the dirt like a wardrobe full of bricks and laid there motionless and silent, save for a small escape of bodily gases.
"Leave human alone, big stinky,"
said Pompon in defiance. Jeff sat up and saw the little hopper balancing proudly on the fallen Goliath's chest. With renewed vigour, he swept up his little friend into his arm and rejoined the fight. It was a good 10 minutes before the battle died down. The remaining yobs had decided that enough was enough and began to gallop away as fast as their stumpy legs could carry them. Jeff and Ray stood among a sea of bodies, mostly yobs. Most were unconscious, but occasionally the terrible sight of battered and lifeless bodies, both yob and hopper, greeted his eyes. Jeff arranged the hoppers in a long line, running from the base of the tree to as far back as they would go. Ray looked on, a blend of amusement and pride crossing his face as he watched this particularly normal human find a solution to an almost impossible problem. "All righty then," Jeff beckoned over to the little hopper. "You ready, Pompon?" The hopper nodded.
"Me ready."
Jeff led Pompon along the lined-up villagers, and as he passed each one, he instructed them to start bouncing up and down on the spot. Soon, the entire line was like an undulating orange snake, accompanied by a thundering beat. Pompon went to the far end of the line. "Okay," Jeff called to the bouncing hoppers. "Once you've done your bit, get around to the other side as quick as you can." Pompon leapt into a long bounce, landing on the end hopper. The timing was perfect. The two hoppers compressed at exactly the same moment, and the resultant bounce was double the height of the first one. She came down again, but further along the line, where another hopper caught her and sprung her up even higher. Everyone watched intently as she continued to gain altitude every time she landed on another hopper in the line. Jeff stuffed a knuckle in his mouth in concentration, mumbling the words, "Come on, come on, come on, you can do it." Pompon was halfway across the line, and already she was bouncing over half the height of the tree. All the now redundant hoppers had gathered near Ray and waited. This was it. The final bounce. There would be no room for error. Pompon came down fast, and with a loud smack, she bounced up again, higher than the tree itself. It was an astonishing sight. No other hopper had done what she had. And she was rewarded by a breathtaking view. For just one brief moment, she was one with the gods. She flew over the top of the tree at the apex of her leap, and she could see the universal remote sitting in a bough beneath her. Gritting her teeth, she curled up and turned a somersault, which allowed her antennae to grasp the metallic remote as they passed it. Down on the ground, the rest of the hoppers had arranged themselves into a crash landing pad. Jeff and Ray clung to each other as if their lives depended on it, both with tears in their eyes. Pompon came down, still clutching the lozenge-shaped remote control. But something went wrong. In this unique case, what comes down must go up. And she hit the group of villagers as planned, dropping the remote. But then she rebounded up again, flying way past the huddled group. Jeff and Ray gasped in terror as they watched Pompon hit the ground hard, rolling and half-bouncing until she ground to a stop. Everyone raced over to the fallen hopper and gathered around, looking in with grave concern. Jeff pushed through to get her. He knelt at the little one's side. Little Pompon had suffered terrible damage upon landing, and her body and face were marked with numerous cuts and grazes, each one leaking clear orange blood. More awful was the fact that she was half deflated, which was never a good sign for a hopper. I'm responsible for this. It was too much to expect from a child. I only hope you can forgive me and honour the memory of Pompon here, because she saved not only me and Ray, but your village and your way of life. Remember her forever. Get your biggest stone and place it with her family. Ray's bottom lip twitched uncontrollably. The hoppers looked down at the ground in an unspoken minute's silence. All that could be heard was the desert winds howling around the mountains. Then there was a gentle hiss. Jeff looked down at the child in his arms and saw that Pompon was reinflating. He looked on in astonishment as the little one's eyes flickered open.
No stone for Pompon yet. Me want to celebrate victory.
Jeff whooped in joy. Ray threw his head back and wailed loudly, the emotional roller coaster becoming too much for him. The group moved off, heading back to their village. It was going to be a great celebration. About an hour or so later, a huge shadow moved over the devastated Yob village. Hundreds of feet up in the sky, the terrible shape of the furious anger moved in like some evil vulture circling for scraps.
Bugger! Screamed Kelvin. We're late! Heads will roll for this!
And roll they did. The following morning, Jeff and Ray stood at the edge of the Hopper village, preparing to return with the universal remote to the kingdom of the Slags. Jeff regarded the object. It was a flattened, torpedo-shaped thing, pretty much resembling a remote control as one would expect, except that it was larger and had only a small number of gold buttons. Well, now we have it. What does it do? The old hopper looked serious.
Remote fixes things, changes. Very powerful and very dangerous. Only old ones to use it. Please keep safe.
Jeff nodded as Ray put the remote into a small bag that he'd been given.
Okay, then. Time we went, I suppose. Thanks for everything, old chap.
Look, said Jeff, pointing to a number of approaching hoppers. From the village huts, a group emerged. At the front, three big hoppers carried a crude stretcher, inside which sat their little heroine. Pompon still looked weak, but she was smiling and on the road to recovery.
Thank you, humans. Hopper's safe from Yobs now. Never attack again.
Jeff shook his head. No, you guys have saved us. And now you'll have a real future for once. He looked at the other villagers around him. You've got Pompon to thank for this freedom. Never forget that. Pompon beamed at Jeff.
Don't forget hoppers. Come back soon.
We will. See you soon. All of you. The hoppers watched as Jeff and Ray walked off. A few steps later, they were both cheered up to hear a rhythmic rumbling of the hoppers bouncing up and down on the spot, as if applauding their new friends. Ray and Jeff entered the Queen's castle, dusty, tired, and bruised from their battle. Unfortunately, they still hadn't thought of a way of escaping from the Slags and their mad queen, despite having talked about it for hours.
We've got to get to my ship somehow, said Ray. Oh, it's hopeless, Jeff, let's face it.
Well, try and think of something, all right?
Replied Jeff desperately. He noticed the guards heading their way. Oh, here comes the welcoming committee.
The metal-plated Amazons formed two lines, between which Jeff and Ray walked. At the end of the lines stood the Queen. Regal, centred, and mouth-wateringly attractive in her best red satin dress, she approached the travellers. Jeff grinned a little and nudged Ray with his elbow. "Now, there's a sight for sore eyes, eh?" "Yes, lovely," replied Ray coldly. "Oh, doesn't she turn you on at all?"
"Well, let me see. She's a bald, aggressive, evil tyrant, completely psychotic, and a cannibal to boot. Forgive me for being a little frigid, but no, she doesn't do anything for me. You must be suffering from Stockholm Syndrome."
Jeff was a little put out by his tone. "Oh, well, suit yourself. Well, at least I'm going to die with a smile on my face. And I've never been to Stockholm anyway, so it can't be that." The Queen greeted the two men with a big smile. But the smile looked insincere, almost sinister. It was the kind of smile one sees on air hostesses and speed cops.
"Hello, me old Maccas. How's it going?"
Jeff spoke first.
Not bad, your fineness. Well, we both nearly died, but nothing too heavy, you know."
He was surprised to hear the amount of sarcasm in his tone, but he put it down to stress. Queen Shelley was also a little surprised.
"Never mind, eh? You're back now, ain't you? Have you got a little prezzy for me, then?"
Ray pulled the handbag off his shoulder and held it out.
"Yes, here you are. The universal remote is all yours. Can we go free now, like you promised?"
Shelley shot an arm out, making Jeff flinch wildly. She took the handbag with greed in her eyes and rummaged around for the object of her desires. Her face lit up with satisfaction and maniacal pleasure.
"Not until I test it, scump."
Ray looked at Jeff, and Jeff looked back. They seemed to be doomed all over again.
"Oi, guards, take these two inside, clean them up and send them back to me in an hour."
Underneath the throne room, Jeff and Ray were treated rather well this time round. They were both relieved and surprised to be presented with their own original Earth clothing. It was, in fact, a set of sophisticated copies, generated from the Royal Tailor's fabric fabricator, but for Jeff especially, to be back in jeans, trainers and a T-shirt, was a warm feeling that only served to convince him that their freedom was assured. The royal chef whipped up a couple of plates of food, but both Jeff and Ray declined to eat hopper steaks and settled for green salads instead. The chef was none too pleased. Shortly after, they were escorted back outside. They realised that they were being shown the way to the landing platform where they first arrived.
"See? She's keeping her end of the bargain. We're being set free."
Ray was still suspicious.
"Don't count your chickens, Jeff. This mental monarch still holds a major grudge against my father, and by extension, me. And by association, you too." Clearly, Ray was the realist in this situation.
At the end of the thin platform sat their furry little spacecraft, the Marshmallow Penguin. Ray, despite his sour outlook, was pleased to see her looking undamaged. Maybe Jeff's optimism was justified?
Standing at the front end of the ship was Queen Shelley and a handful of guards. She had changed once again, this time into a figure-hugging silver plastic catsuit which gleamed in the sunlight, topped off with a wig of straight, golden hair.
Jeff and Ray approached her, each with a bellyful of trepidation, unsure of whether this meant freedom or death.
"Hello, lads,"
called Shelley, smiling one of those "I know something you don't know" kind of smiles. Jeff thought he'd better start the conversation off on the right foot.
"Watch her, babe."
The right foot was obviously in his mouth.
The Queen dropped her smile like it was made of lead. She grabbed a golden star from one of her guards and jabbed it into Jeff's ribs. He yelled out in pain as a few hundred volts zapped through him instantaneously. He fell to the floor like an unstrung marionette.
Shelley walked up to Jeff and, without a sound, grabbed him by his left ear, which made him squeal in pain. Pulling him close, but without loosening her grip,
she snarled.
Nobody but nobody calls me Bay.